Welcome to Saturday Bhagavad Gita class. Last Saturday we have begun chapter 3. So we will chant the verses of the entire chapter, Krishna. So last Saturday we began our discussion on chapter 3. Of Bhagavad Gita, which is called Karma Yoga. We saw a brief outline of the whole chapter, the various topics discussed in these 43 verses. We saw that this chapter opens with Arjuna's confusion. Arjuna has heard in the second chapter in some detail about Buddhi Yoga. Buddhi Yoga means, really speaking, fixing one's mind and intelligence in Lord Krishna, which is really Bhakti Yoga. The word Buddhi literally also means intelligence. So Arjuna has got confused by these instructions. Because on one hand, Lord Krishna has asked Arjuna to keep away from abominable activities, sinful activities, and to fix his intelligence on the Supreme. So Arjuna is thinking that the battle is a sinful activity, and therefore his mind and intelligence must not be engaged in the battle. He sees the performance of karma, especially in the battle, and Buddhi Yoga as being incompatible. So Arjuna is thinking that how is it that Krishna wants me to avoid abominable activities, he wants me to avoid fruitive activities, and at the same time he wants me to fight in the battle, which is a ghastly affair. So therefore he says in the first verse, Tat kim karmani ghore maam niyojayasi Keshava. Ghora karma, that means ghastly activity. Why are you asking me to engage in this very ghastly warfare if actually intelligence is superior to fruitive work? And he says that now my intelligence has become bewildered by your instructions. So please enlighten me and clear this confusion. We saw that Arjuna has misconceived real spiritual life as being retirement from activity. He thinks spiritual life means to not act anymore. And this is a very popular misconception. People usually think of spiritual life as being one in which you withdraw to a secluded place and then practice spiritual activities all on your own. And even though one may not be qualified for it, one goes into seclusion in this way. So this is their conception, the popular misconception. And Arjuna is taking the easy way out. However, the point to note here is that whenever we desire something separately from what Lord Krishna wants, whenever we have our own personal interest or desires in something, that is a sure-cut formula for bewilderment, confusion, and misery. The wise person is he or she who dovetails one's desires with the desires of the Lord. This is true intelligence. And when we do so, then Lord Krishna takes care. Because he declares in the 18th chapter, Sarva Dharman Parityajya, Mam Ekam Sharanam Vraja, Aham Tvam Sarva Papebhyo Mokshayishyami Mashuchaha. Abandon all varieties of dharma and surrender unto me, and I will protect you from all sinful reactions. Do not fear. To surrender means to follow instructions. And when we follow his instructions, then he says, I will protect you. Then we have nothing to fear. Just like a soldier who acts on the superior command of his commanding officer and he kills, then he is not personally liable. However, if his commanding officer does not authorize him, he kills in a sphere outside the battle, in some civilian area for his own purpose, then that soldier, instead of being awarded some medal, he will be actually taken to the court and punished. So when one makes one desires the same as Krishna's desires, then it is Krishna's duty to protect us. So this is the safest path. But Arjun is thinking separately. This is called prithak bhavam. Prithak means separate. Bhav means to have one feeling or some desire. So the moment you have your own self-interest in something, you are going to invite trouble. So Arjuna has not cleared up this point as yet. And having aired his confusion in the first two verses, now Lord Krishna will begin to explain Karma Yoga from verses 3 to 9. And particularly from verses 4 to 9, he talks about how the soul is actually very active. Lord Krishna explains, just to recapitulate briefly, that there are two kinds of faith or two kinds of yoga. One he calls here as Jnana Yogena Sankhyanam, which means the analytical process of trying to understand God. And the second he lists out as Karma Yogena, Karma Yoga, which in this context means actually Bhakti Yoga. And Arjuna is not able to understand that all forms of yoga ultimately are different rungs on the same ladder that lead to the same goal. Arjuna, however, is thinking of these different yogas as different processes. So Bhakti Yoga is the topmost rung, and one who has attained Bhakti is considered to have reached the topmost rung of the ladder of yoga. And then, having sensed Arjuna's mood, Lord Krishna condemns inaction. And he explains to Arjuna that basically by avoiding all activity, you cannot avoid the reaction to work. Arjuna very intelligently is thinking that when we act fruitively, that is expecting some result, whenever we perform activity in this world, some reaction comes to us. And because the reaction comes, there is bondage, bandhan, karma bandhan. And because of this karma bandhan, we are bound in the cycle of birth and death. Therefore, we have to take birth again and again in this world. You perform an action, there is a reaction. You suffer or enjoy the reaction. You perform karma, again experience the reactions. Every moment we are performing karma, activities. And in one day, how many millions of activities have we performed? We cannot count. And each of these activities is going to have a reaction. So just imagine how complicated is the whole scheme of karma and its reaction. And in Lord Krishna's supercomputer, there is perfect arrangement for keeping track of every single karma that we perform. And what should be the reaction for that? Just imagine, how many living beings are there? How many human beings must be there? And for all these crores and crores of human beings, including even in past lives, Lord Krishna is keeping track. And not only that, even after one leaves the human form of life, if one has taken up a lower species of life, where one may not perform karma which draws a reaction, but one at least has to face the reactions of one's karma performed in human life, then also Lord Krishna has to keep track. Suppose a human being is born as an animal because he has performed many sinful activities. So in the dog's body, he has to receive the karma that he performed in the human form of life. So there is no single living entity who doesn't have a karmic equation to work out, who doesn't have to receive some karmic reaction. So can you imagine how complicated is the task of judging all the karmas? So Arjun's question is that by performing karma, there is reaction to karma, and this causes bondage. It causes repetition of the cycle of birth and death. So to avoid repetition of cycle of birth and death, we should avoid bondage to karma. To avoid bondage to karma, we should avoid the reaction. And in order to avoid the reaction, we should avoid the karma. So if I don't perform any karma, then no reaction. But Lord Krishna says no. What does he say? In the fourth verse he explains, na karmana manarambhan naishkarmyam purushoshnute. Naishkarmyam means freedom from reaction. Naishkarmyam na ashnute. You will not achieve freedom from reaction by doing what? Karmanam anarambhan. By not performing karma, you are not going to achieve the state of naishkarmya or freedom from karmic reaction. Even if you become lazy, even if you don't perform your prescribed duties, still you will get the reactions of karma, because that avoidance of your prescribed duties is also a form of karma for which you will have to face the reactions. So Lord Krishna says that do not think that by abstaining from work you will become free from the reaction, free from bondage. And then he also explains, nacha sannyasanadeva siddhim samadhi gacchati. If you take sannyas, you renounce, don't think that you will get perfection. Na siddhim samadhi gacchati. You will not get that siddhi, that perfection. So Lord Krishna very clearly outlines here that inactivity is not an option. That all living entities must not try to avoid karma. And Lord Krishna will make the point here that even if you want to avoid karma, you will not be able to avoid karma. Why? That he explains in text number 5. So let us all chant text number 5.
Nahi kaschit kshanam api jato tishthatya karma krit karyate yavashah karma sarvah prakritir jairguneh.
Translation by Srila Prabhupada. Everyone is forced to act helplessly according to the qualities he has acquired from the modes of material nature. Therefore, no one can refrain from doing something, not even for a moment. So why is it that we should not try to stop doing our karma? Number one, because it is not going to get us free from reaction. And number two, as is mentioned here, even if you want to stop, you cannot stop karma. Because that is the nature of the living entity. It is the nature of the soul to be active. So therefore Lord Krishna explains, nahi kaschit kshanam api jatu tishtha akarmakrit. Akarmakrit means not doing any activity. For how much? Nahi kaschit kshanam api, even for one moment. You may be thinking, let us say I am sitting here in the Bhagavad Gita class. I am sitting very silently, very quietly. I am not doing anything. You are doing so many things. You are hearing this lecture, or if you are sitting here and not hearing, your mind is wandering somewhere, or perhaps you are falling asleep in the lecture, you are doing some karma. At every moment there is some karma. So therefore Krishna says, you cannot be in the situation of a karmakrit. You have to be karmakrit. At every moment you will perform action, because you will be forced to perform. By whom? by the three modes of material nature, sattva guna, raja guna, tamo guna. All living beings in this universe are controlled by these three modes. The word guna means rope, and it also means quality. This material nature has its three qualities of sattva, rajas and tamas. And these three qualities also act as ropes of bondage for all the living beings who are here in this world. So therefore, the lower beings, like the animals, are considered in the mode of tama, ignorance. The human beings are considered in the mode of passion or rajas. And the devatas are considered in the mode of goodness or sattva. And even amongst the animals, there is some classification. Among the animals, although generally compared to human beings, they are in tamogun. But amongst themselves, there is also some relative classification. Among animals, monkey, donkey, camel, these are examples of animals in the mode of ignorance, tamogun. Lion, tiger, these are examples of animals in the mode of rajas, passion. The cow is an example of an animal in the mode of goodness or sattva. Even among human beings we find, although generally the human beings are classified as rajagun, but even amongst human beings there is such a vast range of people. You have so many variety of people you meet in the world. No two people are unique, isn't it? Infinite variety of personalities we see around us. And each is a unique combination of these three modes of sattva, rajas and tamas. We see some people who are extremely tamasic, very unclean, very dirty and filthy, addicted to bad habits, lazy. There are some people who are very passionate for achieving some higher goals compared to what the tamoguna people engage in. But what are their higher goals? Making money, enjoying in worldly pleasures, attaining name and fame. So in other words, these are the rajasic people. Very easy to identify who are the rajasic people. And the sattvaguna people, they are very peaceful by nature. They are not much concerned about procuring much wealth, procuring name and fame. They have more interest in things like poetry, philosophy. They are self-content by nature, quiet, peaceful. So even among human beings, you see that there are different natures. When you say he has a very hot-tempered nature, by nature he is like this, by nature he is like that. Which nature? The modes of nature. Rajagun, tamogun, sattvagun. So these three modes of nature are controlling every living being and making the living being act in a certain way. So actually all living beings are simply puppets in the hands of the three modes of material nature. Prakrite kriyamanani gune karmani sarvashah ahankara vimudhatma kartaham iti manyate. Lord Krishna explains that basically, although the living entities consider themselves to be very free and consider themselves to be the doer of all action, karta aham iti manyate, they think that I am the karta or I am the doer, but actually speaking, who is the doer? Prakrite kriyamanani gunahi karmani sarvasha. The three gunas of prakriti, of nature, they are impelling, forcing the living entity to act in a certain way. So when the tiger sees the deer, he is impelled by the rajagun to jump at it and eat. That is his rajagun acting. When the alcoholic sees his bottle of liquor, immediately he is attracted there. He is compelled by the tamogun towards that object. So therefore, every living entity will act, will be forced to act Even if someone is going to take sannyas and renounce activities, but still he will have to act. Because still he will be governed by the three modes of material nature. So Lord Krishna has explained very nicely here that in the path of yoga, actually speaking, advancement is considered not in terms of giving up work, but in terms of actually the quality of one's action. That is what determines who is more advanced on the spiritual path. Because the soul is active, so the Vedas prescribe duties for every living being to perform. And by performance of these prescribed duties, one gradually becomes purified. And eventually, when one is on a higher platform of jnana or knowledge, then one may be in a position to take sannyas and give up one's prescribed duties. So performance of prescribed duties is necessary for people in this world in general, because it is a process of purification of the heart, a process of disentangling the living entity from karma. This is the whole process. However, the process of bhakti is superior even to that. One may be very scrupulously performing one's prescribed duties, but if there is another person who may not be from a high state of life, who may not be prescribed performing these prescribed duties or even having knowledge of these prescribed duties very in great detail, but that person has devotion for the Supreme Lord, then that person will be considered superior. You may have heard this story about the Brahmin and the prostitute, where the Brahmin and prostitute used to live across each other, and the Brahmin was always performing his prescribed duties very perfectly. The Brahmin's prescribed duties are Pathana Pathana Yajana Yajana Dana Pratigraha. Pathana Pathana, he must be studying the scripture, reciting the Vedas, he must be teaching the Vedas, he must be performing yajna, he must be teaching others how to perform yajna, he must be receiving in charity, he must be giving in charity. So this is called Shat Karma of a Brahmana. So he was performing all this. Every morning he will sit outside his house and he will be rocking his back and chanting the mantras. So he was doing, but his eye was always on the neighboring house. Who is coming? Who is going? And that other lady, although she was engaged in activity that was not good, but by heart she was a devotee of Lord Krishna. Somehow circumstances had compelled her to be in that situation. And one day the Yamadutas came, and they came to this Brahmin, and they came to drag away his soul to the court of Yamaraj. And at that time the Brahmin became very fearful and protested. And he said, "My dear Yamadutas, you have made a mistake. You have got the wrong number. I think you should go there. You have made a mistake by one house number." So the Yamadutas said, they consulted their books, no, we have not made a mistake. The Brahmin protested that, "I am performing all my puja part, my pathana pathana, I am doing regularly, and I should be entitled to mukti, and you are coming here, whereas that lady should be entitled to hell, but she is getting the opposite reaction." So then the Yamadutas explained that although you are performing your prescribed duties, but your consciousness is not here. You are not aware of the purpose of performing your prescribed duties. You do not understand that ultimately the purpose of performing prescribed duties is to please the Lord Hari. This is a very important thing. Atah pumbir dvijashreshtha varnashrama vibhagashah svanushthitasya dharmasya samsiddhir haritoshanam. Whatever our varna, our ashram, we may be Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, Grihastha, Brahmachari, Vanaprastha, Sannyas, we all have our prescribed duties to perform according to Shastra. But if we are performing mechanically without understanding the purpose and the goal, like this Brahmana was doing, then it is not of much value. What is the purpose of performing all the prescribed duties? samsiddhim haritoshanam. The samsiddhi, or the perfection of performance of prescribed duties, is to please Lord Hari or Lord Krishna. Whereas that other lady was performing abominable activities, but in her heart she was devoted to Krishna. Of course, that does not mean that one should be a devotee of Krishna and perform activities that are not recommended. But this is a very special extreme case. So therefore the Yamadutas took away the Brahmin for judgment. So from this story we understand that prescribed duties are recommended for the general individual, because every individual must act, and the Vedas say how we must act. By this prescribed duty, we gradually become purified, but the process of such purification is ultimately to come to the platform of bhakti. And when one comes to the platform of bhakti, and when one is sufficiently advanced, it may be that one may give up some of those prescribed duties, because one has already got a higher duty. Bhakti is the highest duty. It is a duty to God. So therefore, a great devotee like Madhavendra Puri, he prays, Sandhya Vandanam Bhadramastu Bhavato Bhosnama Tubhyam Namo. He says, I am a Brahmin. Oh my dear Sandhya Vandana, my respects to you, but I am sorry that I cannot perform you anymore. Sandhya Vandanam Bhadramastu. So may you be well, may everything be glorious with you, but I have nothing to do with you now. Bhosnana Tubhyam Namo. Oh my dear Bath, as a Brahmin, I am supposed to take bath 3 times a day, morning, afternoon, evening. All glories to you, but I am no longer now interested in you. That does not mean he was not taking bath, but he did not do it as a ritual at certain times. Bho Devah Pitarasya Tarpana Vidhau Naham Kshamah Kshamyatam. Oh my dear Devas, please forgive me. I am unable to perform all the yajnas to please you and offer the fruits of these yajnas to you, karmakanda in other words. Oh my dear Pitaras, my dear forefathers, please forgive me. I am not able to perform all the Shraddha, Pinda, etc. Kshamah Kshamyatam. So please forgive me, all of you. Why not? Yatra kvapi yadava kulottamasya kansa dvishaha smaram smaram agham harami tad alam manye kim annyename. He says, and the reason for my not being interested in you anymore is smaram smaram, I am always remembering. Who? I am remembering yadava kulottamasya, the most glorious descendant, the topmost descendant of the Yadu dynasty, Kansa Dvisha, the one who killed Kansa, the evil-minded Kansa. And because I am remembering him, agham harami. Agha means sin. All my sins have been taken away simply by the process of remembering Lord Krishna. Tat alam kim anyena me. Therefore, what more do I need from more than this? I am remembering Lord Krishna, that is sufficient. But he was really remembering Lord Krishna. We are not on that platform. So Madhavendra Puri here, this great devotee, the Param Guru of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he is explaining here that bhakti is most important. It is the ultimate goal. Therefore, the lowest platform is where one does not care for prescribed duties. The human platform begins with performing prescribed duties. And the highest platform, which is the goal, is bhakti. Simply performing prescribed duties and not coming to the point of bhakti is of no use. But it is better than not performing and being sinful. And if one performs bhakti, one becomes a pure devotee of the Lord. Even if there is some discrepancy, some mistake in the performance of prescribed duties, it is all right. Lord Krishna doesn't take very seriously. Therefore, in Srimad Bhagavatam, Narad Muni explains in a very beautiful verse to his disciple Vyasadev, who is the compiler of the Veda. Tyaktva swadharmam charanambujam harer
भजन अपक्वोथ पते ततो यदि यत्र क्ववा भद्रम अभूदमिष्य किम् को वार्थ आप तुम अभजताम स्वधर्मतः।
He says, my dear Vedvyas, tyaktva swadharmam. Suppose there is someone, tyaktva, he has given up his swadharma. Swadharma means prescribed duty. Somebody is a grihastha, brahmachari, sannyasi, he has a prescribed duty. Somebody is brahman, kshatriya, they have prescribed duties, that is called swadharma, on the platform of the body. So if somebody has given up his prescribed duty, for what purpose? Tyaktva swadharmam charanambujam harer bhajan. For the sake of performing bhajan or devotional service to the lotus feet of Lord Krishna, of Lord Hari, charanambujam harer bhajan. However, after having given up his prescribed duties on swadharma in order to do bhakti to Lord Krishna, bhajan apakvo tato yadi, if by his chance, because of immaturity in his bhakti, he has not reached a sufficiently advanced platform, suppose he falls down from the path, patet tato yadi, not necessary that everyone who takes to bhakti must fall down, yadi, in case, suppose having given up his prescribed duties and he takes to bhakti and he falls down, my dear Vedvyas, what is the loss? What has he lost? He has gained everything. At least that small time for which he has rendered devotional service to the Lord, that is his eternal gain. You see, in this world, suppose you are doing a business and you have earned 10 crore of rupees and then the person dies. Is he guaranteed in next life he will start with a bank balance of 10 crores? That he will be born in Birla family, Tata family? No. He will be born according to his karma. No guarantee what will be the economic status of the family in which you take birth in the next life. But not so with spiritual things. In spiritual things, whatever you have accumulated, that will always be to your credit. It will never be lost. Even death cannot deprive you of this. In the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, we have seen Lord Krishna has explained, Neha bhikramanashosti pratyavayo na vidyate svalpam apyasya dharmasya trayate mahato bhayat. He says, even svalpam apyasya dharmasya, even a little bit of activity on this path of Bhagavad Dharma will protect you from the greatest fear. What is that greatest fear? That you may take a lower birth in the next life. That you may forget Lord Krishna in the next life. So Lord Krishna says, nah, don't worry. Whatever you have gained, na nasho na asti, it will not get destroyed. So in other words, Narad Muni is telling Vyasadeva that even having given up some of his activities, worldly activities, has taken to bhakti and then he goes away from bhakti, no loss. Whatever he has gained, he has gained. That will always be with him. But on the other hand, if there is a non-devotee, one who is not a devotee of Lord Krishna, then even if he has achieved everything in the world, he is performing all his prescribed duties perfectly, but not a devotee of Lord Hari, then what is the use? Because all the things that he has achieved in this world, will he be able to carry it away with him when he dies? No. Therefore, Narad Muni glorifies the path of bhakti and says that one must, under all circumstances, engage in the path of bhakti. So, the soul has various options. The soul can either, the living entity, can either perform sinful activities and not worry about the scriptures and then keep on taking birth again and again. Or the individual living entity may try to perform prescribed duties given in the Vedas and make gradual progress in self-realization, or the intelligent living entity, especially in the human form of life, will directly take to the devotional service of the Lord. These are the choices that the Atma has. The Atma can act in any of these three ways: sinful ways, performing prescribed duties according to the scripture, or performing bhakti. The first is called vikarma. Vikarma means sinful activity. The second is called karma, which means karma performed according to the shastra, prescribed duty. And the third is called akarma, spiritual activity. So the Atma must perform activity in one of these three categories. But the Atma cannot say, I will not act. That is not possible. So that is the point that Lord Krishna has been trying to explain in this verse. And then, having explained this point, he says, suppose in spite of the mind not being totally pure, one takes a sannyas, then what happens? The condition of such a person is described by Lord Krishna